This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Pull up a stool and join us. The Sports Bar with Danger and Battaglia. Weekdays 3 to 6 on 95.7 ESPN.
Back in the Sports Bar. Danger and Battaglia, AM 950, 95.7 FM, ESPN Rochester. All right, Matt Perino, Syracuse Post-Standard, scheduled to join us in a few. Talk some Buffalo Bills and get you prepared for Sunday. Game you can hear right here on ESPN Rochester. Pregame starting at 9 a.m.
You know, if you don't feel good about the Buffalo Bills, you don't have to search too far, right? All the national guys are piling on this team. But here's somebody I respect, Danger, that played the game, that is a congenial man, Christian man. Not kind words for the Buffalo Bills. This is Hall of Fame quarterback Kurt Warner, who works now for the NFL Network, on Twitter. Quote, after watching the Buffalo Bills offense this past week, it was no surprise they struggled. I have no idea what they were trying to accomplish on a lot of their pass concepts. I'm sure they had their reasons, but I just couldn't figure them out. Whoa. Whoa, an indictment there, Brian Daboll? Or could it just be perhaps the protection was so bad that whatever it was downfield, you couldn't work your way through? But my goodness, Danger. I mean, that's some high praise there. Sarcastic. From Kurt Warner.
Yeah, listen, we don't know a lot about Brian Daboll other than his previous stints in the NFL didn't go well. And when you look at where he was and who he worked with as a coach, he was the tight ends coach in New England, okay. But he was an offensive coordinator in Kansas City. He was an offensive coordinator in Miami. In Cleveland, everybody will say, well, he didn't have good quarterbacks. Go back and look at his quarterback. Go look at his quarterbacks when he was in Cleveland. He was terrible. He was terrible for the 2 years he was in Cleveland and a failure. Yeah. And look, there's probably a little bit of that, sure. But isn't that your job as a head coach or as a coach, or a coordinator, is any coach? Your job is to get the most out of what you have. Your job is to make subpar better, to improve the people that you're working with. That's the job of a coach, right? Is Brian Daboll the right guy for Josh Allen? I don't know yet because we haven't seen the two of them on the regular season field together. What we've seen in the preseason, the two of them working together, I mean, from the very first day of OTAs, Gene, I mean, the precedent was set. Brian Daboll was working with Josh Allen.
Yeah, we were excited. Because I never got that sense that Rick Dennison was a let me roll up my sleeves and work with the quarterback type of guy. Rick Dennison was more the guy up in the box, kind of dictating things, which that's fine too. But for a young quarterback, who's going to be that guy? To have somebody working directly, the offensive coordinator, that was a positive. But to me, it's something I think worth pointing out that somebody who certainly knows something about NFL film, what did we talk about going into that Baltimore game? I think we all looked at it from this perspective. Wow, this is exciting. We haven't seen what Brian Daboll, we don't know anything about this offense. And here you have a Hall of Fame quarterback saying, I have no idea what their passing concepts were. Oh, okay. That's certainly an indictment, in my opinion.
Well, that coupled with Zay Jones' mom saying that Zay has to tell Kelvin where to line up, Kelvin Benjamin, where to line up on each play. That's a little bit disturbing as well. I don't know if that speaks to a negative relationship between Zay and Kelvin Benjamin as much as it speaks to a guy who doesn't understand the offense. So if Kelvin Benjamin doesn't understand the offense, is that the rest of the offense too? Is it just him? Is it exclusive to him?
Yeah.
And we see this throughout the league. This is not exclusive to the Buffalo Bills. It's this arrogance. It's what our pal Sigmund Bloom calls the assumption of rational coaching. And especially early in the season, it just runs rampant. This is my system. We're going to run it my way. Even if you don't have the pieces to run that system effectively, even when your guys don't fully understand or grasp what it is you're trying to put together. I mean, how many instances did you see it in week one? It started on last Thursday, a week ago tonight. Steve Sarkisian, Atlanta offensive coordinator, with your team on the goal line, pouncing and ready to score, ready to get off to a big early lead. And you're not able to punch it in because you're getting too cute. You got to be the smartest guy in the room. How about, not to bring up a sore subject for myself, but the Bears on Sunday night. You have the chance to put away the Green Bay Packers on a third down, but you get cute. Try to call a play that, a run up the gut would have been sufficient. Scott Linehan in Dallas is guilty of this. Why not just get the most out of your players instead of insisting on doing it your way? Your way worked in with the players that you have, the talents that they have. That's a coach. I don't know.
Well, someone who was in Baltimore joining us on the phone, he is, can't call him new. He's been on the beat now for a few months. Matt Perino. Back in the sports bar, Syracuse Post-Standard. Matt, I appreciate your time. We're just talking about these tweets from Kurt Warner, critical of Brian Daboll. Where in a game where you lose by 44 points, Matt, there's certainly a lot of blame to go around, but how much credibility do you give to Kurt Warner? How much do you think he's actually saying something here about Brian Daboll that we should just question what the Bills trotted out there week one?
Listen, first of all, I'll say, you look at this team from top to bottom, and we've been talking about it throughout training camp, this offense. I mean, there's a couple positions where, specifically the wide receiver position and the offensive line across the line, where, they're probably ranking in the lower end of the league. So to put it all on Brian Daboll and say, you know, he's got to get this offense moving, I think it might be a little premature, but at the same time, I'm not sure that, this team and these players were put in the position in that they weren't ready to play. That's the bottom line, right? They weren't ready to play. And I think he should take a bit of the blame for that. But at the same time, I don't think you could sit there and say that it was all on Brian Daboll.
Yeah, I'll hear that, Matt. But I mean, when you have an entire offseason, an entire preseason, and everything leads up to week one, and you see the effort, and to hear Sean McDermott almost arrogantly say on Monday that he didn't question the effort or the intensity of his team. I mean, can we just flat out say that these coaches didn't have these guys, talent aside, these coaches just didn't have these guys prepared for week one?
I think that's completely fair to say. I think that, from on both sides of the ball, there's excuses that could be made and it was the first week, but that's it right there. You said it. They weren't ready to play. So I think that they have to take ownership of that. I think Kelvin Benjamin's one of the guys that did that. We spoke to him afterwards and he basically said, listen, I dropped a couple balls that I got to make those plays. And, Josh Allen gets his first NFL touchdown pass if Kelvin Benjamin makes that play in the end zone.
Mm-hmm.
So I think, there's a lot of issues that you could take from Sean McDermott's approach after that game all the way up until yesterday, refusing to elaborate on the reason that Josh Allen has been now pushed into the starting quarterback role after they basically sent the message that he wasn't ready 1 week prior. And he said he'll go to his grave saying that the right decision was to put Nathan Peterman out there. But for the second time, you go back to last season, what he did with the Chargers, it wasn't the right decision. That's the bottom line. It wasn't the right decision. There's people in the national media basically saying that this guy has no place in the NFL. And that's that falls on the coaching staff because they're evaluating these guys, not only in game environments, but in practice. And to be that far off base and have to flip-flop right off the bat here, it's not a great thing. But listen, you're here now. You're at ground zero with Josh Allen as your starting quarterback. You go from here. And I think that, you know, I was a proponent for getting this guy out there right away. I think that you got to see what you got. This is a league where if you don't have the goods at the quarterback position, cut bait and change right there and figure out a way to get someone in that spot that can produce. And I think, you know, waiting and, you know, letting him sit behind a guy, I just think, you know, you're going to learn more about him on the field.
Barring injury, does Nate Peterman even take another snap in this league?
I mean, it'd be not as a starter. I don't see it happening as a starter. And I gotta wonder, you know, is it time? And you know, this coaching staff and this organization seems to really be about Nathan Peterman. Is it time to maybe, you know, move on from Nathan Peterman for the Bills and go out there and bring in a guy like Derek Anderson or one of the other top veteran backups? That at least, you know, if you bring them in here in a backup role, if you have to turn to them, if things aren't going well for Josh Allen or if he gets injured, that they can they have at least a little bit of a history of producing. Right now, I don't know how you can have any confidence in Nathan Peterman if things go south for Josh or he gets injured. How are you going to put that guy back in the game?
Yeah, I worry about the support around Josh Allen. And you know what? If he struggles in a couple of games, I'm okay with that. I want to know that this guy isn't Ryan Leaf. I want to know that he can handle adversity. I want to know that he's going to learn from his mistakes. And one thing that we hear from his teammates is he doesn't make the same mistake twice, unlike his head coach. But I'm worried about his support staff, and it became glaringly evident from watching the Monday night game with Sam Darnold. And Darnold may turn out to be a far superior, more talented quarterback than Josh Allen is or ever will be. But to see what they've put around Darnold in New York, meaning the first guy that sees him when he gets off the field is a veteran quarterback who's got a coaching background from when he wasn't an NFL quarterback, but that little period of time there where Josh McCown was taking a hiatus from the NFL and was coaching high school football. I mean, that seems like the kind of guy that can help mentor and bring along a guy and answer a lot of questions, almost like a big brother type of figure. I don't know that that person exists on the Buffalo Bills staff. Have you seen that, Matt?
No, but I think they had a guy like that last year. I think his name was Tyrod
Taylor. Yeah, sure.
I think that that could have been a potential option for a guy that can help a young quarterback in this league, a guy that has been, you know, was a backup for many years in Baltimore, came over here, lived of a starting quarterback, had some limited success. And I just, it's been odd to me that, you know, the aggressive nature of this organization wanting to move on from Taylor. I get it. He has his limitations, but I think for what you were paying him and the fact that, you know, how this played out, if they have Josh Allen even back in January or sooner, that was the guy they wanted to go after, there had to be something, you know, in the back of their mind that told them that he was going to need some time, right? I mean, that's why they went out and got AJ McCarron. You had Taylor on your roster, and I get it. You don't want that controversy necessarily, but it gives you at least the ability to, you know, I mean, look at Cleveland. They're going to be in that position when Baker Mayfield is ready to come in and play. They're going to bench Taylor. I mean, that's going to happen at some point, and that could have been the Bills, and it could have been a little bit softer. But for whatever reason, I think that Brandon Bean, Sean McDermott kind of missed the mark here in evaluating Nathan Peterman and thought, I read an article this past week after the game, and it talked about how the writer said that he thinks that McDermott is missing the mark on Peterman. He thinks he's like a veteran journeyman quarterback. He's only a second-year quarterback after getting drafted in the fifth round. He's basically a rookie, and this isn't a guy that you just hand the keys over of the car over to. So I think it was a little bit of a misstep getting rid of Taylor.
Yeah, I look, I'm not faulting them for getting rid of Taylor. I still think that that was the right move. You got a third round pick. You don't have, if you could keep Taylor on this roster for what you were about to pay AJ McCarron, then I think that makes sense. But there's no way Taylor was going to take a pay cut again. So the move to me is justified. But I still think that there's a lack of support for Josh Allen in terms of what he's getting when he's not on the field. I think about our conversation at the start of training camp with Brandon Bean. And when Gene and I asked him about what he saw in Josh Allen from his time in Wyoming to the moment that they selected him with the 7th overall pick, what made you think that he was your guy? And his answer to us was his improvement, that he had improved throughout the draft process. The questions about his footwork drastically improved through the Senior Bowl, through the combine, through his pro day and everything. And I think about that, and the one constant that was there was the guy that was coaching Allen during that time, and Jordan Palmer. So I guess my hot take here, Matt, is why don't the Bills explore the possibility somewhere down the road of bringing in Jordan Palmer as a quarterback's coach?
I mean, that would definitely be an interesting option. It seems like Palmer is kind of developing his own brand as kind of a quarterback guru, and who knows what the market is for that kind of work. But I think that with Josh Allen, what I can say about what I've taken in from this entire experience from the start of training camp to now is I think that the Bills got themselves, and fans should be excited about this, a guy that wants to be on the field, wants to compete, has that kind of fire in him that you look for in a starting quarterback. Like, people talk about leadership, and I think that that's important, but I think that guys in that room want to look to their quarterback and know that that guy is going to do anything he can to win games. You go in the locker room after practice, right? And they have a big ping pong table set up. And the first couple days of practice, nobody's really touching it. They're going through the motions. And then all of a sudden, the last week or two, you go in there, and as soon as media are allowed to walk in, Allen is always on the table, and he's playing somebody. He's begging somebody to come over to that table and play him. And he is competing on the ping pong table. He's fiery. He wants to battle. You see it in him. So I think that now he has the job. The team is rallying around him. LeSean McCoy said yesterday, and he kind of, I thought this was interesting. He said, listen, it's on us to make the game easier for him. And these guys got to step up and make some plays, make some catches, put him in a position to be successful. And that falls on the whole unit, from Brian Daboll to LeSean McCoy and Kelvin Benjamin, all the way down to the bottom.
Matt Parrino, Syracuse Post Standard, our guest here as the Bills working out again today. Yesterday, a little saltiness in the locker room where Zay Jones did not want to talk to reporters. Kelvin Benjamin said today would be his day to talk. Matt, what, if anything, was the fallout of Zay Jones' mother tweeting things about Kelvin Benjamin lining up in the wrong spots here?
Mm-hmm. Basically, from my understanding, is Zay doesn't want to talk about it. Sean McDermott said that he was happy in the fact that Benjamin Zay Jones talked it out. What I took away from Kelvin's availability was he was very reaffirming the fact that he's this team's number one wide receiver. So maybe there was some hurt feelings there. I'm not sure. But I think that maybe this will be a blessing in disguise for this team, and that he'll take this as a wake-up call, and that he needs to start making some plays. And I think that this team needs Kelvin Benjamin to be the Kelvin Benjamin from his rookie year into his sophomore year, a guy that's a trustworthy option in the passing game. And, you know, it'll be interesting to see now with Josh Allen in the game with his kind of arm strength, which receivers are going to step up. I mean, Corey Coleman was a guy they brought in here, they traded a 7th-round pick for because of his speed. And he didn't even make it a month before they had to cut him because he just wasn't the right fit. Now he's with the Patriots. Who is going to be that long ball threat with Josh Allen? It's probably not going to be Benjamin. Who knows with Zay Jones? I mean, he's kind of been very inconsistent in his time. And then you look at a guy like Robert Foster, who struggled to catch the ball at times during training camp. So, you know, this whole wide receiver core, there's a lot of, you know, this is a group that people don't think is very talented, and they have to prove a lot of people wrong, and it starts against the Chargers.
Matt, we're sitting here talking about the Bills and their problems and all their shortcomings, and yet somewhere in my gut, I don't hate Buffalo on Sunday. Like, I don't think it's... I, I, I will give them a chance on Sunday. I don't think it's going to be anywhere near as bad as what we saw in week one. And maybe it'll come down to Buffalo not winning so much as it is San Diego losing because the Chargers, I'm sorry, Los Angeles losing because the Chargers just seem to do that when they, whatever opponent they find ways, creative ways to lose games. And I certainly could see that happening on Sunday. What needs to happen on Sunday if the Buffalo Bills are going to get a win?
So there's two factors that I have for this, right? Right off the bat, you got the Chargers coming west to East Coast. I think that that's always a struggle for those teams. You're playing much earlier. It's just an uncomfortable game week, right? And then you take the fact that, you know, you're breaking down film of this Bills team all week long of a 47-3 blowout, and it's hard not to just kind of check this one off as a W. I mean, you're basically coming in here and playing power rankings-wise the worst team in the NFL. So how it's kind of got to be tough to get up. I mean, we talked to Anthony Lynn yesterday. He called in the small group of Buffalo media, and he said that his guys are pissed off, right? They just lost to Kansas City at home, haven't beaten the Chiefs in you know, 8 or 9 games, and they're mad. They're coming in here to get the job done, but there's no Joey Bosa in this game, so you got to wonder, you know, Patrick Mahomes lit it up against the Chargers last week. That spells, you know, that's at least a good sign for Josh Allen in his opener that, you know, you may not be facing as fierce of a pass rush. So I think for them to get it done, they got to do the little things and they got to start early, right? They have to have positive plays on first and second down, not put themselves up against it with third and longs consistently. And that's what happened to Peterman in this offense last week is they were getting penalties. They were taking, losing yards on plays. You can't do that in the NFL and succeed. And I think this defense will show up. I think that they proved last year they could turn the ball over. They had a few plays they missed last week that they think they're going to make those corrections. And I think you can, you know, they might, you know, at least keep Phillip Rivers in check for the most part. You're never going to just stop a guy like him, future Hall of Famer. But they got to do the little things. It starts with the fundamentals. And then if they're there late in this game, you got that, you know, home crowd. I agree with you. I wouldn't put it past the Bills to, you know, hang in there and who knows, maybe pull out a W.
Matt, why is Vontae Davis on this 53? I was surprised they didn't keep him active, but my goodness, do the Bills have any answers right now at the corner position opposite of Trey White?
They really don't, and I think they what happened during the preseason is they really, you know, grew an affinity for Phillip Gaines, and that may have led to that decision to keep Vontae Davis inactive, but, you know, Sean's been asked about it, and he's been very, you know, flippant about the fact that, you know, they had 7 defensive backs active for the game. They like Raphael Bush at that nickel corner spot if Taron Johnson isn't available. And, you know, he got hurt last week, so they had to move Bush into that spot. But they seem to think at this point that Phillip Gaines is a better option than Vonta Davis. It'll be interesting to see what happens this weekend if Vonta is made active. But you go back to the start of training camp, and I was, you know, I'm not patting myself on the back here by any stretch of the imagination, but from the beginning, I got a very weird vibe off of Leslie Frazier from his first media availability when he said, listen, we're evaluating Vonta Davis. He's got a long way to go before he gets back to the caliber of player that he was when he was going to the Pro Bowl. And, you know, he's coming off a very serious injury. We don't know what we got here. And the, you know, the positivity around Vonta Davis throughout the process, I never thought was overwhelming. And I talked to him before the opener on Friday, and he told me that he had felt the best that he had felt the entire camp. He feels like he's finally been able to make some plays that he wasn't at the start. But even with all that said, he's still not able to get on the field. You have to think about what other options are there out there on the open market if you can't put Gaines in the Davis in the game, and Gaines is making the mistakes like he made last week. So it'll be interesting to see. I would bet that, you know, Vonta Davis is active for Sunday.
Matt Perino, NewYorkUpstate.com. What are you working on for the site?
Talked to a bunch of guys today about Tremaine Edmonds said yes, had some interesting things to say about Josh Allen's debut. So later today we'll have a, 7 guys that give their bit of advice to Josh Allen in his first start. We got a couple videos up on the site right now. If you go over to our YouTube page, breaking down, I spoke to Jeff Miller, the Chargers beat writer for the LA Times. And we have a video up on our YouTube page, breaking down the game, previewing the game. And we'll have more coverage coming up, and then we'll have you covered on Sunday.
Matt, appreciate the time, and let's see what happens Sunday. Matt, thanks so much.
Take care, guys.
You got it. Matt Perino, Syracuse Post-Standard. Read his work at NewYorkUpstate.com covering the Buffalo Bills and doing a damn fine job of it as well.
Yeah, so we've got I'll drink to that coming up. Also, a late addition, we'll have more on this Nighthawks story. Jack Good's Buffalo News, who covers PSC, covers the Bandits. What are we in for here in Rochester with the arena? Jack Good's will join us here in the 4 o'clock
hour. All right, let's take a quick break here. Come back with some compelling thoughts from around the world of sports. I'll drink to that is next in the sports bar. We'll dive a little bit deeper into Robin Lehner's piece for The Athletic and what he went through during his time here in Buffalo. It got pretty dark. We'll dive into that and more next. Yeah. I'll drink to that in the sports bar. ESPN Rochester.
Rochester's most listened to sports station invites you into the locker room at ESPNRochester.com. Our little tribe of super fans, sports junkies, and competitive degenerates. Join now for breaking news updates, free tickets and prizes, game highlights, player and expert interviews, and unprecedented access to the best that ESPN Rochester has to offer. The locker room at ESPNRochester.com. Free to join and packed with action from AM 950 and 95.7 FM. The sports leader, ESPN Rochester. The all-new ESPNRochester.com is the online home of the sports leader. Listen live 24-7. Read up on the latest Bills and Sabres news. Hear the Sports Bar with Danger and Battaglia. On demand. Scores, stories, opinions, and contests. The all-new ESPNRochester.com. The online home of AM 950 and 95.7 FM. The sports leader, ESPN Rochester.
All right, football fans, the NFL Draft is almost here, and the free Odyssey app brings you the latest coverage from the biggest sports radio stations across the country. Which players will help your team the most? Who will make a draft day trade? Will they be ready for week one? The local conversations about the team you love. All streaming free right here on the Odyssey app. A-U-D-A-C-Y. Download it today.